The guest is not always right. However, it's our responsibility to make the guest happy. People don't like to be told how to do things. They want to do things the way they want to do it. If you can meet the guests where they want to be met, then you're going to have a much more successful restaurant and you're going to have higher sales. Just telling people they got to work faster or harder is not going to change anything. Is that it's our responsibility as leaders to make the job easier for your staff, employees, and in the wildflower case, breadheads.
I'm excited to have Luis Bazil, the founder of Wildflower. I learned early on the value of customer service. So with all my companies, I put the customer at the center and I do whatever it takes, including take financial loss at times when I have to in order to make that customer happy. However, as you continue to scale, that becomes more and more difficult for you to be involved in every single thing. So how do you build that culture and how do you align your staff in the restaurant to buy into your vision and buy into those brand promises?
Okay, so it starts really right with a selection process, right? So, and that's the hiring process. So the Wildflower has very specific hiring guidelines. Doesn't mean that you're going to hit the mark all the time, but it helps select people that we believe are going to be successful within the Wildflower brand. There's no simple way to motivate or to get a large group of people. In the case of the Wildflower, let's call it 700 breadheads all marching to the same song and to the same beat. So there is a diligence to this process. And again, this goes back to this every time, every day thing. You can't take a day off. So if a new breadhead is hired and they don't get the orientation, that's a problem. And that problem needs to be addressed because that breadhead now might be working in the restaurant. And I've always said, look, we don't train on our guests. That's the worst person to train on. Okay. And, I think anyone that's in guest acquisition business understands it's hard to get new guests. So it is far easier to keep your existing guests and get them to come one more time than they were coming a month ago or a year ago than it is to get a new guest. And so the reality is that it starts with, again, these standards and a process and communicating to new hires and, quite frankly, people that work at the company what they are. So part of our whole guest service experience is we publish all the guest comments to every store every day. And that includes anything that comes through the Wildflower website, Yelp, TripAdvisor, Google, all of the third-party delivery. And sometimes that can be a few hundred comments. And it's done by store. And the store understands basically what the standard is, okay? So our standard is 4.5 stars, okay? That's what you must average, basically, in order to be within the Wildflower goal, right? So, before the star thing came out, we used to talk about it differently. But now everybody understands stars, okay? And the reality is, if you want to have a great brand and you're not on your social aspects of the brand, right? More consumers today go to peer reviews than anywhere else to see whether they're going to go to a restaurant or a retailer or anything. And those hold a lot more weight than they ever have before. So it's critical that you manage those expectations, right? And then when a guest does have a bad experience, it's critical that they hear from the brand. And it's critical that they hear from the brand specifically addressing the issues that they have. And then, in the end, it's really funny about consumers. If you have that level of response and you're empathetic and listening and apologize, most of the time, people actually start apologizing to you and go, well, it wasn't as bad as I wrote about it or something. And it's a very funny dynamic that occurs. I'm not saying that happens all the time, but really this level of responsiveness and communicating that. So when your managers see that the leaders of the company are doing this, and then the hourly, in the Wildflower case, breadheads see that, it's just contagious. And it's a lot of fun to be able to turn an experience around for a guest that is not so happy that day. I think it's really critical to understand that, look, it's our job. The guest is not always right, okay? In guest service, there is hardly ever very clear what happened. It's always gray. It's always somewhere in the middle. However, it's our responsibility to make the guest happy. And so, you know, there are times where, look, there are some people out there, sadly, guests, that are just really just off-putting. I mean, just inappropriate and rude, okay? And those guests, quite frankly, I don't want them coming to my restaurant. I mean, if you can't be respectful to the breadheads, then really so. And that's a rare occurrence. But my point only is that in this industry, I don't hear it as often, but I still, you know, the guest is always right. Okay. The guest is always right only in the mind that we want to get them to come back and we want them to be a follower of the brand. It doesn't mean that they are right in that they're unreasonable or, you know, you're offering them really everything you possibly can offer them and they're still not happy. Well, that guest has other issues and it really isn't about that restaurant or that experience. And I think it's critical that people understand that because in an organization, your employees or your staff, they need to feel supported by leadership. And if they don't feel supported by leadership, then they're not going to go give their best to the brand on any given day. And so there's a real fine line there that people have to navigate.
Agreed, yeah. And again, ultimately, when I'm leaving personally, thinking through my case, I just want to kind of vent and just express my frustration. If you don't give me an avenue to do that with you, then the next place that's most convenient to do is a 1-star rating on Google. Yep. So if you just simply listen and talk to the guests, 99% of the time, they're not going to leave that 1-star review because now there's a relationship built and you've done what you should have done. And I think Ritz-Carlton does that and they have a thing that says, look, when a guest makes a small deal out of something, hey my AC's not working in the room. It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? How did we even screw that up? Like, I can't even believe it. I'm going to go and I'm going to train this stuff, da, 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 da. They're going to make such a big deal that the customer kind of backs down. It's like, hey, it's not that big of a deal. Just get me another room and I'll be fine. And vice versa. When the guest makes a huge deal out of something, then they'll downplay it and then they try to get that customer to agree with them and they use this whole take the opposite approach and then sort it out, fix it. And by doing that, obviously that gets them that brand excellence. All right, let's jump into AUV. Obviously, you guys started at roughly under $1 million, but you ended up with a whopping $3.3 million. I think I want to ask a couple of questions. I'll ask that first question. So are restaurants good businesses to own?
I think, look, the restaurant industry is an incredibly challenging industry. Let's just be clear. And if you have a passion for this business, I think it's incredible. If it's a business that you're either looking to start or buying, but you don't really have a passion for hospitality or food, or managing or leading people, I think it's a terrible business to be in because it takes all of those things to be successful. And if you're resentful about those things or you just don't like doing them, then it's really, really hard to do that every time, every day. The restaurant business has changed over the years. There's more competition than there's ever been. There's so many different ways that the consumer can access your brand, right? You know, before my dad's restaurant, there are really two ways. You either came in or you called on the phone. Those are the only two ways that you could get food from most restaurants. Really, quite frankly, even 30 years ago. Okay. Now I've got calling on the phone. I can come in. I can go through a drive-through. I've got third-party delivery. I've got online ordering. I've got apps. I got the social sites. I can go to Yelp and some people can order through that. So there's all these confluences of inputs that, you know, depending on the brand, consumers can use. And, you know, making sure that that system to get those orders to the restaurant in an orderly fashion, that's critical. And that's also part of the reason, you know, why the volumes have grown in some of these restaurants. So those that can figure out how to actually give the consumer a place to order from your brand, however they choose to, I think are the most successful brands because, people don't like to be told how to do things. They want to do things the way they want to do it. And if you can meet the guests where they want to be met, then you're going to have a much more successful restaurant and you're going to have higher sales.
I agree. In fact, I was last night I was ordering something and I looked at the direct website of the brand that I was trying to make the purchase and they were 15% cheaper than Amazon. But I was like, you know what? It's just so convenient. I paid 15% more just to simply order through Amazon because I didn't have to create an account. I didn't have to do any of that stuff. Payment information was saved. It's like, hey, I want this. I want this many of it. Ship it to this address, use this card, and it's done. Yeah. And then I don't have to deal with the complexities of the delivery. It was glass, so if it broke, what happens? I just didn't want to deal with the actual manufacturer because I knew Amazon would take care of it and would just do a better job. If it did break on delivery, they would just replace it and give me another one, and I didn't have to deal with anybody or anything. So the power, and I always say never underestimate the power of convenience. People pay more for convenience. I.e., case in point, I paid 15% more for just simply that peace of mind, that convenience that Amazon offered.
And that's critical to tying that back into the execution, right? So, for example, when a consumer orders online or let's say through your app or something, that food has to be ready when they show up. That's what they're expecting, okay? And when it is, and it's right? So everything has to be in the bag. And when that happens, that's what I call a frictionless, you know, transaction. And when it's not ready, then the consumer starts losing faith. Well, why did I do that? I mean, this is supposed to be convenient. It's not supposed to make, you know, I'm not supposed to have to wait. Okay. And, you know, an interesting thing with all of these different inputs, and this might go back to sort of the hospitality piece. At the Wildflower, when, you know, a DoorDash or an Uber Eats driver comes, it's Wildflower standard to offer that person a drink, a free drink, every time they come. And there are times where, you know, I've been in different places, not in the Wildflower, and, you know, a driver might recognize me or I see them delivering somewhere and I go, hey, do you ever pick up from the Wildflower? And the comments are, well, they're the nicest people. The food's always ready. They offer me a drink. And quite frankly, our managers, look, if you're really having a bad day, and again, they're taught to read this through the body language, you know, maybe they need more than a drink. Hey, you hungry? Do you want a cookie, a scone, or do you want a sandwich? I mean, again, we're not in the business of giving away free food to every driver that comes in to pick up a delivery order, but those small touches make a difference. And when that driver is, you know, on their app and they're going, well, should I pick up from a restaurant that the food's never ready and they don't treat me kindly and they don't say hello to the Wildflower? Well, I believe they're going to choose the Wildflower. So it's all of those little touches that actually make a big difference.
Gotcha. Exactly right. All right. Next question is, do restaurants have thin margins?
Well, I think that lots of restaurants do have thin margins.
Why?
Lots of restaurants have healthy margins. So I think the restaurant business, there's really two things. One is it's about your AUV. The more sales you have, the easier it is to make money. It's just that simple. So revenue is king. I think revenue is king in almost every business. I don't care whether it's restaurants or retail or book sales or clothing. It doesn't matter. The more business you do, typically the easier it's going to be to make money. Okay. I think that scale is also critical. So that a single unit operator doing, you know, let's call it $1 million or $1.5 million is just not going to have the purchasing power that a brand that has thousands of units or 16 units in the Wildflowers case. And you have to understand that. And the hard part is sort of making it through that, you know, time where your margins aren't as good as you'd like them to be, but there's a path to getting to either increased volume and more unit count, right? Because remember, the largest of brands, everybody started with one. There's no restaurant company, there's no retailer that ever started with 100, okay? Everyone had to open one store, and that one store had to be successful. And then there are, you know, there are ways. There's buying co-ops, you know, there's relationships. And those are the kinds of things that people, you know, it's hard when you're running a business because you sort of get these blinders on and you don't really see other opportunities. But those other opportunities do exist. And I encourage people to join their state restaurant associations. I encourage people to talk to their competitors that are in a similar set as they are, because people in this business generally are willing to share their information and help. But you got to get out of your own way and you got to know how to ask for help. Lots of people, including myself, it took me a long time to figure out actually how to learn to ask for help. It's probably one of my biggest failures as a leader, is that I just thought, oh, I'll figure it out, or I'm embarrassed to ask for help. I think the strongest of leaders know that they need help, surround themselves with incredible people, and are not afraid to reach across the aisle and go, I don't know how to do this. Can somebody show me?
Agreed 100%. So let's clearly, point taken. I'm in the same mindset. I'd say in business, 100% of your problems will go away if you simply did one thing: increase top line revenue. So what are the three ways in a restaurant to increase your average unit volume? Increase top line revenue.
Yeah. I think that we talked about one of them, and that is really ensuring that you're meeting the consumer where they want to be met. So, a lot of us, I think there's a lot of people out there that think things need to be perfect before they roll it out. And I would argue that there are surely certain things that have to be perfect. Okay. However, progress versus perfection is a far greater business enhancer than making sure it's perfect. And so if you don't have a perfect system, but you need to get revenue increase, well, then maybe you need to think about like a white label app, or you need to get online ordering up and running. It might not be the prettiest. It does have to be functional. I mean, if it's too clunky, then the consumer is not going to use it. But the reality is you can start small. For example, on third-party delivery, the Wildflower has a very, very large menu, right? Breakfast, lunch, dinner. We got, eggs and pancakes, and we got pasta at night, soup, salad, sandwiches. We don't offer everything on third-party delivery because we offer the things that we know consumers want, and that makes it easier to execute. So again, and you can add things on. So that's one way, making sure that you are meeting the consumer where they want to be met. The other thing would be you have to be out there, right? I'm a big believer in local store marketing. So you got to go to chamber meetings. You can't be afraid to shake people's hands when you're out at social events. Hey, I'm the founder, or I run ABC restaurant. Have you ever been, you know, let me invite you to come in and have a meal with us. Those kinds of things do a lot in creating a following that can help build business. None of these are overnight wins. Okay. Let's just be clear, but there's lots of ways that you can build business. And then the last piece, which I think is really the easiest one, in terms of not really going outside of your comfort zone, is you got to deliver this incredibly compelling experience, this brand promise to your existing guests. And then you have to ask them to become a follower. So a follower is different than a fan of a brand, okay? When you think about fans, particularly sports fans, they're typically fickle sometimes, okay? When the team's winning, man, the stadium's packed, everyone's on the bandwagon. Hey, you're my team, okay? A follower is a person that loves that team through the ups and the downs. They may not have won in 10 years, but they are still a passionate follower of that team, and they root for that team. They may not root as much, or they may miss more games when they're not playing well, but the reality is they still care. And if you can create guests that are followers of your brand, then they're going to be your best marketing, because they're going to go out and tell people. And again, in this day and age, peer-to-peer, guest-to-guest reviews or guest-to-guest conversations about restaurants or retailers are the most powerful marketing tool you have.
Very good. So let's talk about the exit stuff. You obviously just recently sold your brand. I want to spend about 30 seconds on why did you sell it, and what was the transition like from, okay, I'm thinking about selling, to actually deciding to sell and exit the brand?
For me, the Wildflower was only going to really increase significantly in value if we went to another market outside of Arizona. So we only operate within Arizona. I turned 65 this year, and quite frankly, the risk of expanding outside the marketplace, even though you can never be 100%, but I'm 99.999% sure that the Wildflower would be successful anywhere it goes. However, it's a heavy lift going into a new market these days, okay? And why I say that is because, one, it's expensive. Just things are expensive. Everybody knows that, okay? The real estate's expensive. The cost to build's expensive. To build a brand awareness is expensive. And for me, that was going to probably be another 5 years, in my estimation, of, you know, really, really daily diligence. And the second piece of that is that Wildflower was a family-owned business. So the only person taking the risk on that was my family. And it just didn't seem like the right time. You know, I'm healthy. My family's healthy, thank God. But you never know. And to spend the next 5 years thinking about growing the thing outside the marketplace and not hoping it works, but making it work, just didn't seem worth it. And so once I knew that I was unwilling to grow outside the Arizona market, then I knew it was time to sell, because people need opportunity, right? I mean, if you want to have the best and the brightest people working in your organization.
Can you double click a little bit on that and tell us how that culture is built? How do you keep it up? How do you ensure that everybody fits in, and et cetera?
Here's my advice to people that are either presently running restaurants or thinking about running restaurants. Okay. One is, it's a business that you have to love. I've said that previously in this podcast, and I believe that. So if you truly don't love the business, then it really isn't a business that you should get into. And I probably actually believe that about all businesses, but really the restaurant business in particular is really, it's a labor of love. The second thing that I recommend is don't be afraid to ask for help. Again, I spoke about it in this podcast. It took me a long time to figure out that I should ask for help. And once I opened myself up to asking for help, so many other avenues opened up for both the business and me personally. And it's been an incredible journey, learning how to ask for help. And lastly, I think that as a leader, you have to focus, you have to have an expectation that your company or your brand is going to do it right all the time. And then it's your responsibility to see where you're missing the mark and not really beat your team up over that, but figure out how do I make it simpler for them to be successful? Because just telling people they got to work faster or harder is not going to change anything. Okay. Most people are going to say, I'm working as fast and hard as I can. And the reality is that it's our responsibility as leaders to figure out what systems aren't working, what systems need to be refined, or what systems simply need to be thrown out and changed, and implement those in a thoughtful way to make the job easier for your staff, employees, and in the Wildflower case, breadheads. So those are three things I think that are good takeaways.
Amazing. So let's touch base a little bit on culture, building that culture, maintaining that culture within the organization, especially, again, 700 employees. That's a lot of people. I'm struggling with 80, 90 people. I don't know how you do 700 and get them, rally the entire troops behind you. So,
Previous to starting the Wildflower, I had a reasonably, successful career in restaurants. And, most of the companies that I worked for, it was really only two. They had a mission, okay? And everybody's familiar, I think, with the mission statement. And I found that, the only time the mission statement was ever discussed was by the senior leadership team at a strategic offsite once or twice a year. And then I heard a gentleman by the name of Rudy Mick speak at a conference back in like 2006. And he talked about a business having a purpose. And if you've ever been to a conference, I'm sure many of people listening to this will go to conferences. When you hear a speaker that resonates with you, typically you want to go up and thank them. Hey, that was so great. Really motivating, right? And that's what I did. And Rudy and I struck up a friendship. And, I really was interested in creating a purpose-based company. And then it took a while, for us to, quite frankly, save enough money to hire, Mick and Associates to walk us through a process where we would become a purpose-led company. And back in 2009, we called it a slice team, a little play on bread, but really it was a slice of everyone that worked at the Wildflower. Male, female, restaurant workers, support center, office, manufacturing, new, old, and 24 of us went away to learn about each other and to create what we call what was going to be the Wildflower purpose. And we came out of that meeting, which was for most people the first offsite they've ever been to in their entire life. Okay. And there was one agreement that we laid out in the beginning, which was that everyone had to agree to every detail of the purpose, meaning the words, the punctuation, the capitalization, all of that. All right. And this young man who had really only been working with us a few months and really mostly spoke Spanish, not very good English, we thought we were done. And he was brave enough to say, I didn't like something about the Wildflower purpose. I can't remember exactly what it was. And as a participant, at that moment, I said, there's really something special happening here. When somebody whose second language is English is comfortable enough to raise their hand when he knows everyone wants to leave, that is something that you got to hold sacred. You have 5 weeks to complete this passport, self-paced. And the cool thing about that is that it makes new breadheads, it forces them to start talking to other people in the company. And other people are, you know, again, forced to communicate with new people. So it's welcoming. And if you don't like it, it's sort of a self-policing system. If you think it's weird or you don't really like what we're asking you to do, then you typically just check out before the 5 weeks is up. You quit, basically, okay? However, if you don't complete that passport in 5 weeks, we ask you to leave. And in the 14 years we've been doing this process, I don't think we've given more than 10 extensions of that 5 week time. So when you ask basically, how do we keep this culture? That's the first piece of it. And then really leadership, management, and breadheads all practice it on a daily basis. And the reality is that it starts at the top. It starts with guys like me, starts with the senior team, starts with the director of ops, the district managers. And we use the language of safe space, tie back to our values, and often talk about the purpose. And that really has been an incredible winning formula for us. And just like I said, manufacturing our own bread was a competitive advantage. The wildflower culture is 100% a competitive advantage, and any restaurant can choose to create it. However, if you make that choice, you really have to be willing to walk the talk. And I just think lots of people aren't willing to do that. But if you are, it can be so liberating. That whole process honestly made me a far better person. So better husband to my wife, better father to my children, and a much better leader.
Absolutely. It all comes down to that. It's what is the purpose? Why do you wake up every day and why do you do what you do? And that's the hardest part, is figuring out why you're doing the things that you're doing, and then ensuring that your team has the same thought process, the same mindset. And if everybody aligns on that, obviously it makes it so easy to continue growing, expanding, etc. And then you build an amazing company through that, whether it's restaurant tech or whatever it may be. I think the whole recipe is all the same.
Agreed. Well said.
Amazing. Thank you again for joining us. It's been really valuable, and we appreciate having you on.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to tell my story. And for anyone that listens to this, I hope that it resonates. And I hope that there's a takeaway that improves either your business or your life, quite frankly. So thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely.